Prepping Podcast. We're helping everyday people become prepared for whatever emergencies come our way. Where gear is good, but knowledge is better, because the more you know, the less you have to carry. We're your hosts, Mark and Krista Lawley.
In the Northern Hemisphere, we're coming into that time of the year when we start getting outside and doing things that we haven't been doing in a while, start engaging in activities that we've taken a break from across the winter. We're doing work on the house. We're doing work around the place. We're doing yard work. We're working with different implements that increase our activity level. And one of the things that we have to be careful with that is heat-related illnesses. And that's what we're going to talk about this afternoon. And let's begin, Chris, with the people at greatest risk for heat-related injuries.
Yes, absolutely. There are certain groups of the population that have to be a little bit more attentive to any type of heat sensitivity, and that would be any child under the age of 4, any adult that is 65 years or older, people who are overweight, people who are already ill, either chronically or just temporarily ill at this point.
And then there are people that are on certain medications.
Yes, things like psychotropic drugs, any kind of medication for Parkinson's disease, tranquilizers, diuretics, which is something like a high blood pressure medicine.
Right, Lasix, and a lot of folks call them water pills.
Right, and also those of you that are on any kind of birth control medication, either a pill type or a patch on the skin, those types of medications make your skin hypersensitive to sun, and you cannot be exposed to sun as, you know, like you used to before the birth control. So that's also something to look for. And you can actually see that mentioned in the warning label and information in that medication.
Right. Now, the body regulates our temperature by sweating. And if we become dehydrated, it becomes more difficult for the body to perspire and therefore to regulate our temperature. And the environment plays a large part in how well our bodies cool themselves.
Right, like just the air temperature itself. A higher ambient temperature obviously increases the risk. And also the humidity. That is a major issue in the South, in Alabama. Humidity above 60% sometimes will make sweat evaporation more difficult. And then lower humidity makes sweat evaporation easier. I think Mark actually has an anecdote he can share about a visit to Tombstone, Arizona.
Yes, in Alabama, in the middle of August, July, something like that, you can walk out the door, walk around the house, and you're wet with sweat. Well, we were on a trip to Arizona one time, and we were staying with some friends, and I got up one morning, and I started doing some painting outside of a new porch that they had built. And they were going through some health problems right then, and I just wanted to be of help to them, so I began doing some painting. And we were painting out there, and it was 95 degrees. You could feel the heat. There was no problem that, but we never broke a sweat. My T-shirt never got wet because the humidity was about 5%.
Wow.
So the humidity was doing a very good job of controlling our body temperature, where in the Southeast, we have this liquid air.
Yeah, if it's 95 degrees in Alabama and a very high humidity, you're going to be absolutely soaking with perspiration.
Right. So we call it liquid air. Anyway, wind speed. You add wind speed into the equation, and the faster that wind is, the more evaporation you have. It's kind of like standing in front of a fan. So if you're working outside, if possible, find an area that has as much breeze as possible.
The type of clothing that you're wearing obviously does have an effect. We learned in school years ago that lighter clothing is more reflective of heat, and dark navy colors, black colors, dark gray colors are going to absorb more heat. So you've got to be very mindful about what you're actually putting on your body to wear in the form of clothing.
Right, and also what we're wearing. Mm-hmm. If we're wearing some type of full body clothing, full body suit, something like that, the gear that we're wearing, the packs that we're wearing, if we're on the range or out practicing, the kit that we're wearing with our vest and items such as that, that makes it harder for the body to deal with the temperature changes and to regulate its internal temperature, so we need to be careful with those.
Also, the sun exposure. You know, if you're outside and you're not anywhere near any type of shade or shaded area or trees or something, you're going to have 100% sun exposure. And you can get sun exposure on a cloudy day, too. This is one of those myths about people say, well, it's a cloudy day, I won't get a sunburn.
I've been sunburned on cloudy days.
The worst sunburn I ever had was on the cloudiest, most overcast day. And I understand it's because certain ultraviolet rays actually are not shielding under a cloud, and so don't take a cloudy day as protection.
Or as a day not to wear our sunscreen, which we should be wearing every day. Here's another one that's a little bit surprising, and that is that high body fat content increases difficulty cooling.
Yes, you know, some of us are carrying extra weight, and we have to be mindful of that, that we have to curb some of our time outside or curb some of the activity that we're involved in outside in order to not risk any type of a heat illness.
And as we mentioned a while ago, certain medications, and I think it bears repeating here again, some psychotropic drugs, some medications for Parkinson's, some tranquilizers, diuretics, and birth control. So if you're on any of those, you need to pay particular attention. Now, heat illnesses range from very mild heat cramps to life-threatening heat stroke.
Heat cramps. That's an interesting term, and I believe I've actually experienced that, particularly in the longer muscles of the arms and the legs. But it could also happen abdominally as well, or even in the back. When you're having heat cramps, you need to kind of be looking for heavy sweating during intense activity. And if you're experiencing any muscle spasms or pain, these are caused by not replacing the salts and the fluids that are lost during the heavy activities and the perspiration and the extra sweating. And this can become painful in your arms and your legs and your stomach area.
So how do we deal with that?
Well, the treatment for that is, number one, stop whatever the activity is that you're doing that may be causing these heat cramps. You need to just gently, carefully, and slowly stretch your muscles to help relieve these cramps, and to drink some cool water or a sports drink. Let me just stop right here and say this is not the time to be ingesting alcohol or a lot of heavy sodas, but water or the Gatorade or the Powerade type drinks would be the best choice in this particular instance.
Okay, here's one. Heat syncope. And it's caused by heavy activity and heat with too much water or salt loss. And it's quite similar to the heat cramps in the way it comes about. And what we look for is weakness and fatigue. And here's the key. And the word syncope gives us the idea of fainting. So it's possible that we can faint because of the heat. And what we need to do there, and says stop the activity, which if you faint, you just stop the activity, but it's time to take a break. It's time to move to cool or shaded area. And if you're treating someone who's fainted from heat, you need to remove tight clothing. Let them sip on some cool water or sports drink. And again, never alcohol with any heat injuries. And you may need to use some type of cooling measures to help someone else out, and that's put a fan blowing on them or put cold, wet towels on them, especially if their core temp is elevated. Because if this is untreated, it can put that person at risk for heat stroke.
Something else to be aware of is heat exhaustion. The signs of heat exhaustion are very heavy sweating, cold, pale, or clammy skin, a fast and weak pulse. Nausea and vomiting can clearly indicate heat exhaustion. Headaches, levels of severity of headache, dizziness, the old country word is called swizzy, feeling swizzy, a weakness or fatigue, and also fainting. And of course, again, the very similar treatment for these types of things is stop the activity, move to a cool or shaded area, removing the tight clothing, sip cool water or a sports drink, something that's going to put electrolytes and salts back into the bloodstream. Again, the cooling measures of fanning someone manually or putting an electric fan near them, cold, wet towels, especially if that core temp is elevated. And if that's untreated, if heat exhaustion is untreated, again, they can be at risk for a heat stroke.
In 1989, I actually experienced heat exhaustion. It was on an Alabama day in August, and the temperature was about 95 degrees, and the humidity was about 95 degrees. I was working as a law enforcement officer, and we had some folks hit a tree. We had four people in the vehicle, severe injuries, and wearing a bullet-resistant vest, tactical vest. Getting in that car, helping to get those folks out, I was a paramedic at the time, and it took us a quite extended period of time to get them out of that vehicle. And these injuries were so severe that we flew two out by helicopter and the other two went out by ambulance. And when it was over with, I went down. It was just one of those. I was so weak and I had no control and I just went to the ground. And one of the things that I have experienced since then is that a body experiencing heat exhaustion or really any of these heat illnesses is more susceptible to future events. So my experience, and I have found this to be true, more times than not, if I forget that I have to pace myself when I'm working outside in very hot weather, I'll begin to experience some heat syncope, not to the point of fainting, and I'll often get heat cramps, and I'll start to border on the heat exhaustion. So I have to be very, very careful with this, and you've witnessed this with me over time.
I have.
And I've just had to learn to pace myself and know when it's time to sit down, take a break, and get some cool water to drink.
We have added a way for our listeners who would like to support the podcast to do so. We love our coffee, so you can go to buymeacoffee.com/practicalprep and buy us a cup of coffee. That's buymeacoffee.com/practicalprep. Okay, let's talk about the most serious of all of the heat illnesses, and that is a full-on heat stroke. And yes, that can be fatal.
And this is because the body loses the ability to cool itself.
This is an acute medical emergency situation. If you are experiencing this, hopefully you're not alone, because you may not be able to call 911, but somebody will need to call 911 because that is an acute medical emergency.
And these are things to be watching for those around you. It's critically important that we keep an eye on those that we're working with. And some of those signs that we'll see is one, that they will have stopped sweating. Now let's contrast the heat exhaustion and the heat stroke. You'll have major sweating and heat exhaustion, and they will have quit sweating with heat stroke.
Now, with heat exhaustion, are we back to the clammy skin?
You've got clammy skin.
Okay.
The skin is actually cool and clammy.
Okay.
Where in heat stroke, the skin is hot and dry.
And can be a red color, too. It could be a sunburn color.
It can look sunburned as well. Now, in the heat exhaustion, you will have that fast, weak pulse. But in heat stroke, you'll have a very fast, strong pulse. It'll be bounding.
So think stroke, think strong.
Exactly.
Like those two things can help, remember. And a body temperature of 104 or over.
Right.
Quite serious.
And this gets into a lot of nausea and seizures. And the person experiencing heat stroke is going to be having a throbbing headache.
They also may experience some confusion and disorientation. They may even appear that they cannot hear you, or they're not responding quite quickly enough.
Or they're responding inappropriately.
That's true. I mean, in a way that's completely outside of their normal behavior, they can't even fall unconscious as well.
Right. Now, as far as the treatment for heat stroke, or if you suspect heat stroke, first thing to do is call 911 or whatever the appropriate emergency number in your country is. Call that number and get help on the way. It's critical to get professional medical help on the way.
And in this case, this is very important. Do not give the person anything to drink.
Nothing at all.
But you do want to lower their temperature as quickly as possible. Remove clothing if necessary. You want to immerse them in cool but not icy water. You want to put them in a cool water bath or cover them with cool towels.
In the hospital, sometimes if it's bad enough, they'll literally put them in an ice bath.
Well, the hospital has a different method of treatment.
Right.
And they have the means to move quickly on different areas of treatment, where if you're just alone with like a child or something, you've got to be very careful what you're doing at home.
Right. And if you are waiting on that professional help to get there and you can't put them in that cool bath, one thing that you can do is use ice packs or cool, wet towels and put those in the armpits, put them in the groin area, put them in the neck areas to be able to cool those pulse points to try to drop that core temperature. That's critical with this. And then these folks are going to have to be transported to a medical facility. Now let's talk about prevention and preventing all of these heat illnesses. This is prevention, things that we can do every day when we're going out to engage in increased activity, whether it's hiking, whether it's yard work, whether it's working out.
Going to a sports event.
Right, anything.
An outdoor concert. The most important thing is to hydrate.
Did she say hydrate?
Hydrate.
You said hydrate?
I said hydrate. Fluid replacement is very essential before the activity, during, and after. If you feel thirst, you're already dehydrated.
Right.
And that means if you continue to feel thirst, you're waiting too long.
And a good way to tell is if your urine is yellow, you are dehydrated.
Yes, they actually say that proper hydration would create an almost colorless urine.
Absolutely.
Hey, listen, I just want to tell you about a couple of books that you need to add to your collection and give as gifts. I highly encourage that you go to Amazon and look up this title, Making Contact During Emergencies. This is information that may save your life or the life of someone you care about. If injured, lost, or found in a disaster or another type of emergency. This book was written by Mark and Krista Lawley. I'm Krista and Mark is my husband. Book number two that we wrote that we're especially proud of and has gotten a lot of buzz is entitled Practical Prepping for Everyday People. This is a common sense guide on preparing for life's emergencies. And when we say practical prepping, we mean the type of emergencies you're going to find yourself in and day out. Car emergencies, dead batteries, flat tires, storm damage. The roof has gotten blown off. You find that you have no power, no electricity, no devices are working. These kinds of things are happening to somebody somewhere every single day. And we were astonished when we did a little research to find that a vast majority of people found themselves woefully unprepared for one or more of these types of emergencies. And particularly after this COVID year that we've experienced, I think a whole lot more of us are paying closer attention to things like grocery store supply chains, the ability to be able to buy gas, the ability to be able to move freely about, or what's going to happen if we do have to stay home for 3 weeks solid. Practical Prepping for Everyday People by Mark and Krista Lawley, also Making Contact During Emergencies. Go to Amazon, look these up, add these to your collection. We sure appreciate it. Also, wear appropriate clothing for whatever event that you're preparing for. This is if it's 99 degrees with an 80% humidity, this may not be the time to be wearing long sleeve coveralls to do something outside that could require cooler clothing.
Right. Now, we understand that there are times, some things that you could be doing during the summer outside, you may need to wear that full length long sleeve, and beekeeping comes to mind.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, sure.
I understand that, but we need to take extra care, and that's probably one of the reasons that most of the bee suits that you see are white. Now, as we talked about a while ago, and what I have to do is to pace yourself. Don't overdo it. Don't be stubborn and say, I can do this. I can stay with anybody. I know we went on a disaster relief trip a number of years ago, and there were a bunch of that greatest generation World War II guys on there. And I tell you, they work circles around those of us that were 25 and 30 years younger than them. Don't try to stay with somebody else just for looks' sake. And it's taken me a while to learn that. You have to pace yourself. And here's a good one that, especially with yard work and what have you, utilize the morning and the evening cooler temperatures.
Absolutely.
It's better off to get outside and work in the cool of the morning and then take a break for the heat of the day and then go back to work in the later afternoon if you're doing heavy, intense physical labor, exercise, activity such as that.
Yes, and you want to limit your direct sun exposure. Obviously, that's the greatest source of heat on your skin. Don't forget that sunscreen as well. You do need to protect your skin, but when you have no hat on your head and you're wearing a sleeveless tank top and very short shorts and flip-flops and you expect to be out in the hot of the day, you have given yourself too much direct sun exposure, and any doctor is going to tell you that that's just not the best plan for you to take.
Right, and take some frequent breaks. You need a little bit of rest and hydrate whether you think you need it or not. Hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. That's the key to this.
Exactly.
Okay, let's cover a few additional sun injuries or sun illnesses that we can experience that are not necessarily life-threatening and honestly things that we all go through from time to time.
Yes, and the most common would be sunburn. And I am a person of very fair skin, and I will burn more quickly than other people. I cannot tan. I do not have dark skin. I have very tender, sensitive, reddening skin. I can be in the sun 11 minutes, and I'm beginning to be red.
Right.
So I have to be very cautious of that. So we all know what sunburn is. If we've ever had it, we know exactly what it is. You do want to prevent that with some sunscreening. You can also clothe yourselves with large-brimmed hats or some sort of a cap. And in some cases, you may have to wear some long sleeves of a very lightweight material. There are some long-sleeve T-shirts that are quite comfortable sometimes. If you do need to be outside working on something, some of these long sleeves or longer shorts, Bermuda shorts, longer shorts may be more protective for
your legs. One of the things that you can get into is it's kind of flip-flop weather outside, and those feet haven't seen the sun in a long time. And so I see a lot of people that wind up with the tops of their feet sunburned.
And that's painful.
That's
when you're trying to wear other shoes, too.
Right. And when we start treating sunburn, one, remember, if it's second degree, you get into blistering. And a lot of times we don't realize we're sunburned until it's too late.
Yeah, sometimes
we're already burned.
The blisters may not raise up until
hours,
after you come inside.
Right, hours later. But I've realized that my neck and shoulders have gotten sunburned when I got in the shower.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll know on second degree sunburn, when you've got blisters, do not break those blisters.
No, that can actually create more infection.
Exactly.
So let the blister, you can lie in a bath of soothing treatment, and that helps the skin begin to heal itself. Obviously, staying out of the sun is a good treatment as much as you can.
Put cool cloths on it. Get in and take a cool bath.
Mm-hmm. There's also some light non-aerosol aloe vera sprays, creams, treatments, oatmeal-based skin treatments that can be very soothing at a time like that.
Best thing to do with sunburn is prevent it.
And I've definitely taken that to heart. I try to stay out of the sun as much as I can.
Okay. Heat rash. Now, here's one that's not dangerous, but it's extremely uncomfortable. And heat rash is red clusters of small blisters that look like pimples. And they're usually on the neck, the chest, the groin, or in the crease of the elbow.
Sometimes they show up in areas where clothing may have been very tight or where there may be seams where that is occurring.
Or an area that has not had the opportunity to cool down.
Exactly. So the treatment there would be to stay in a cool, dry place. Keep the rash dry. We recommend putting on some sort of a cornstarch-based baby powder, or even there are medicated powders on
right.
the market that'll help soothe it.
And there we're just trying to relieve the itching of that.
It's not serious. It's just a nuisance.
It's a big nuisance. Now, One last thing before we go, and let's cover this because we see this happening every year, and that's leaving children in vehicles during the summertime. Do not leave children in cars. And I would add to that, don't leave your pets in the car as well.
Exactly. The temperature can rise very quickly. Even if the window is cracked, your car is still a greenhouse effect, and the air temperature inside that vehicle is rising quite a bit higher and in a shorter amount of time and space. And
it can get up to 140, 150 degrees in that vehicle.
Well, sad to say, too, children and pets have perished in hot cars.
Exactly. So anybody that's left in a parked vehicle is at risk, but children especially at risk of getting heat stroke or dying. We see this every year with children and animals that die because they were left in a hot car.
So never, ever do it. If you can avoid taking your infant or your child or your pet in the car, by all means, if they can be safely left with a responsible person at home, do that.
But a lot of times we have to transport them to child care, to other places.
And if that baby or toddler has gone to sleep in their car seat, I'm sorry, wake them up and take them out and take them with you. It's not that much trouble. It's no trouble to take your child or if you can possibly take your pet in to where you're going. Just do not leave that vulnerable life in that car to risk any kind of a heat illness. It's unconscionable. Just don't do it.
Now, when you're leaving your car, check to be sure everyone's out. And don't overlook any children, as she said, that have fallen asleep. And I would say get in the habit, if you're the parents of young children, get in the habit of looking around that car every single time you're getting out of it. If every day you commute to work by yourself, get in the habit of checking that back seat, checking those car seats to make sure that child is not there. If you get in the habit of doing it every single time, you're less likely to overlook them when they're with you. We're passionate about this. There's absolutely no excuse for leaving your child or your pet in the car where something can happen. Anything else you want to add today?
Well, we think all of our listeners are cool. We want you to actually stay cool this spring and summer, and we enjoy you tuning into our podcast, and we just want you to live your best possible life and be safe, and we'll see you next time.
And drop us some feedback on the podcast. We'd really like to hear your input. If you have subject material you would like for us to do a podcast on, drop us an email. Drop an email and tell us what you like about the podcast. Drop us an email and tell us what you don't like about the podcast. You know, we want your feedback. So that email address is info@practicalprepping.info. Again, that's info@practicalprepping.info. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today. And please leave us a 5-star review. That helps more people be able to hear this podcast. Share it with your friends and family. You can reach us on Facebook at Practical Prepping, email at info@practicalprepping.info, and our website is practicalprepping.info. And as always, remember, stuff happens. Stay prepared.